Blog Talk Radio.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is...
What?
My name is...
Dr. Drake.
Yeah.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Here we go. Andre is officially early for next week's show.
Yeah, that's all good. Oh man, my bad, guys. All right, we are officially ready. All right, let's get this party started. All right, how y'all doing? Apparently,
how you doing? All right.
I'm doing good.
Hey, we were worried about you.
No, you weren't. You don't worry about me.
Yeah,
we
thought you were. I wasn't
worried about you. I figured you was at the house in the bed. What better place could you be?
I thought maybe he was sitting on the toilet, like in that Dumb and Dumber movie. You know.
Come on, man.
It's amazing.
I'm just shaving.
Nah,
Mom.
America, like,
yeah.
I was like, oh man. So normally I let Marcy know that we're having the show. She's like, I'll come grab you, but yeah, that was good. But we're here. Before I started.
How many times they happened to me, Andre? It hasn't happened in a while though.
You're pretty consistent. Yeah, you don't fade out too much. Now typically I'm right. I'm like, hey, I got a little time. I'll take care of them.
It happened to me, I think, at least twice. Well, Andre was looking for me for the show, and I was out.
Yep.
It's been years, though.
It's been a little bit.
Yeah.
Fellas, we're here. I'm a little off with my color combination, but at least we're good. So let's get this show here. End of the March is upon us. We got a lot of things to talk about. And that's the funny thing. I was really looking up stuff, and I must have dozed off. So I was looking at all this different stuff, too. So, anyway, we got a lot of things to talk through. Our brackets are busted, as always, officially. But I don't think if you have a perfect bracket, seriously, something must be on there. But let me check with the fellas, as always. Go around the horn. JQ, how you feel this evening, sir?
I'm doing good, bro. Came back from the gym. Ready to talk a little sports with y'all. I was like, uh-oh. That thing kept going. It was just spinning. I said, uh-oh, he flew asleep.
I think I saw the picture of the LSU chick. I just passed out, and I couldn't take it, man. So I'm joking. Go ahead, man.
Kim Mulkey, that was a wild outfit.
She a wild girl,
man. That's a wild outfit. Hopefully it attracts a lot of recruits, though. But hey, all is well, man. Had some Korean barbecue tonight. I'm in a good place.
Korean barbecue. Nice. Gary, how are you feeling on the West Coast, man? How you feeling, my guy?
Doing good. Ready to – I was wondering what the heck. Maybe we were doing it tomorrow night, but we're here. I'm glad. Ready to get this party started.
Rob calls me, and I'm glad that I have him. I was like, oh. I'm like, because I had literally, I'm glad that it's all good. See, the party started. We are officially ready. The number to call the show is always the same number. Call your boys at 424-243-9519. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And lastly, on Facebook, if you go to facebook.com/talkingsports, the 12th man, or if you type in talking sports with the 12th man, 12th man sports, you will find us in that arena as well. We have a lot of things to talk about, and let's kick it off naturally, if you will, with some Final Four predictions here. And Rob, lead us off, my guy. So, you know, again, last week I was talking about, I didn't like Texas, first Kansas, excuse me. And yeah, Kansas won last year, but it's like, man, certain teams you didn't trust, and just interesting how we're here, right? So there's not any number one seeds or anything, which has been a minute in the history of what's happening. But just talk about that and the predictions and what you think is going to happen for this interesting year of the NCAA Final Four.
I'm scared to make a prediction, man, because these games have been wild and crazy, man. You don't know. On the surface, you look at it and you say UConn has just been dominant in the tournament. I mean, they've blown out every single team they played. And, you know, look at that Gonzaga matchup, man. They beat Gonzaga 82-54. Gonzaga was best offensive efficiency team in the country, and Connecticut just annihilated them and held them to 54 points. I mean, it's they have the athletes. Their bigs can run the floor. They defend at the rim. Jordan Hawkins is shooting lights out right now for that team right now. So on the surface, you would think that, hey, you know, they're just the team to beat right now. They're the hottest team in the country. They've been the best team in this tournament. So on the surface, like I say, you would think that they would take care of business and beat Miami, who also has some really good athletes on their team too. That can really run the floor. That was an incredible comeback against Texas, who I thought was playing outstanding too, and, you know, thought they were well-positioned to win that game. But, you know, Miami showed a lot of guts on that team. And they're also a physical team too that likes to run. They're well-coached. Jim Larrañaga is one of the best in the business. He completely turned that Miami basketball team around. They were in the Elite Eight last year, and now they're in the Final Four. On the surface, I like UConn. I'm going to say San Diego State beats Florida A&M. Not Florida A&M, Florida Atlantic.
Look at me.
Yeah. But I'm going to say I'm going to go with San Diego State. They just got some dogs on that team. I mean, they got to muddy up the game to be successful because offensively they're not that great. But if they muddy up the game and make it physical like they've been doing, I think it'll be Florida Atlantic, but I just don't see anybody beating UConn right now to where they're playing. And like I said, I'm scared to make a prediction because all of our predictions have probably been made to go wrong in this tournament. I think I sent y'all something. Was that San Diego State that said 1.18% of the brackets had them in the Final Four? Was either them or Florida Atlantic? It was like 1.18%. It was like insane. But I'm going to go with UConn over San Diego State for the championship.
Yeah, and you didn't touch on him. No go. UConn center is just, he looks like he's about 28 when you see him down there. Like, he just makes Timmy look small. Like, that's just a grown man right there. You talk about Hawkins, they got a really good inside-outside thing happening. And I think that's why they're just beating the brakes off of teams. Because, you know, we've talked about it. The tournament is really a guards kind of playground. You got a really good guard. He can take you places. Like, you saw what happened with Kansas State. Noel.
Kansas State.
Was going absolutely,
he was
nuts.
Incredible.
Yeah, he was. And both of the guards for TCU also played really well to get them into the Sweet 16 as well. So when you get Hawkins playing like that, you know, you already have an advantage. And then you get Sunova just down there beasting people on the block. I mean, yeah, he was ridiculous. He's been ridiculous in this whole tournament. So depending on how, you know, caveats, these officials have been crazy. They've been crazy bad. As long as they don't call, you know, cheap stuff, Sunova picks up a second foul with 10 minutes left in the first half, you know, and he's got to go sit down. That's, you know, change the complexion of the game because Miami has athletes. Because I can just finesse you, Miami can flat out run with UConn as well, the same way they ran with Texas and were able to track them down. But I'm with you. I think UConn is right now is playing the best of the four. And it's crazy. UConn's got a 5.5-point favorite over number 5 Miami, where San Diego State is only a 2-point favorite over number 9 Florida Atlantic. You know, you figure that would be turned around. The 4 versus 5 would be a closer matchup than 5 versus 9, but it lets you know how well that Gonzaga has been playing. And I say they go say Florida Atlantic. Florida Atlantic just, man, I don't know. I don't know if I can pick against them right now. They just are finding ways. They got that big, is he Russian? Or is he something like that? They got 7 foot center. And he just is a problem down low for teams. You know, you just don't really have a dude that big. He's got the blocking shot. Yeah. I was going to say, he's blocking shots as well. So I'm going to go with Florida Atlantic versus UConn. And, man, I guess I got to go with UConn, but I don't know. Florida Atlantic seems like the guy to kind of capture. That's going to be an ugly game, though. Like, if I was to bet that game, yeah. I would probably bet the under. That's going to be a street fight.
The one thing I do like about that Florida A&M team is that I keep seeing Florida A&M, Florida Atlantic. One thing I like about that team is that they're 9 deep. Man, they got a deep bench, and they're all about the same. There's no drop-off in the talent when they go to their bench. They're all the same mm-hmm. guys. So that's the one thing that's impressive about that team. And, I mean, shucks. I mean, their record, I think, is like 35-3. And, you know, obviously they got a 9 seed because they play in a smaller conference. But, I mean, that team's won a lot of games together. There's a lot of chemistry on that team. So I agree with you. That's a tough one to pick. I'm going to still lean towards San Diego State just because the physicality that they bring on the defensive end. But that is a tough one to pick. I mean, it's hard to pick against a team that's like 35-3 regardless of the competition.
Well, in the first matchup.
And they proved that they can be good competition by being in the Final Four already.
Well, yeah,
yeah.
All these teams, UConn seems unstoppable the way they just completely destroyed Gonzaga. I think they're going to be in the finals. But the other, I'm really, you know, my heart is with San Diego. I want San Diego to win this game. But I had in my notes, I had put the bench for Florida Atlantic, and I think that may be the difference. Because, yeah, you don't see much of a drop-off, you know, when those bench players come in. So that may be enough with that point differential being so small to put them in the finals. But overall, I do think UConn is the team that's going to win it all.
Yeah, and they're 35-3. Because they used to seeing that jumper that big down there in the post. You roll in there and you play at Asheville, North Carolina, Asheville University, North Carolina. You go play Florida Atlantic, and that big dude down there is acting the fool. Jack, man, what's going on? How the hell y'all get this dude down there in Boca Raton? Like, yeah, that fall conference is having nothing for him down low. Nothing. And they give you a goal play, too. Do you put him down there doing that? That's why they're 35-3.
Hey, you know, one of our topics coming up is we talked about the parity in college basketball, right? You know, 15, 20 years ago, you wouldn't see a San Diego State or Florida Atlantic in the Final Four, right? But the parity, a lot of the international players have been a key figure in the parity in college basketball, right? So a lot of these smaller schools are going around, traveling the globe, even looking at Miami. They one of their key big men is from Nicaragua. I mean, they haven't had anybody from that country play Division I basketball like forever.
What you say?
And so I mean, you look at that's been one of the reasons why there's a lot of parity in college basketball. Another reason is the one and done, right? You know, a lot of your top players are coming to school for 1 year, and then the Kentuckys and the Dukes and you know, Roy Williams kind of stopped going after those kind of players for a while. I mean, he'll get a few, but he's been kind of getting those maybe four-star recruits that's going to stay a little bit longer. So that's North Carolina kind of already had went away from that trend of going after the one-and-dones.
Did you say Roy Williams?
Yeah.
Roy Williams, they coached North Carolina about 4 years, bro.
No, but I'm just saying, no. It's only just,
I got you. Yeah.
You're just making a point that that's what started.
Yeah, I was like, wait. Go ahead, my bad.
Yeah, but, I mean, that has led to, I think that has, when you look at these schools like Florida Atlantic and San Diego State, these players have been together for 3 to 4 years, right? And they've built that chemistry. Uh-huh. And whereas you see Duke this year had all the talent in the world when you look at an NBA draft perspective, right? But they were only together for a year, right? So, you know, it's hard for them to compete and build that chemistry. Even as well as Duke was playing at the end of the season, some of these teams in the tournament just have been together for 4 to 5 years, and that has just led to so much parity in college basketball right now. And, you know, there's a lot of debate on whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing for college basketball. I like to think it's a good thing. You know, it's you got schools like Florida Atlantic and San Diego State in the Final Four that's normally not there, but the international players and then the one and done of the superstars going straight to the pros. I think it's just made the college basketball game with so much parity right now. And you're seeing, you saw Butler make it to the championship game 2 years in a row. You know, you've seen some other George Mason make it to the Final Four. So you're seeing these teams, if they're able to put together a decent amount of good players together and they play together for 4 to 5 years and they build that chemistry, yeah, hey, it's going to be a tough out. And then with the transfer portal, too, you can add another piece in there. So that has really led to a lot of parity in college basketball right now.
Yeah, and the thing about that, too, is that you talk about that's why a lot of times you look at the summer and then what, huh?
All of a sudden, Naj is on, so I was telling him to hold on. He popped up. He's ready to do this. Yeah, we can hear you, bro. Is that, you know, the same way you see, like, in these Pan Am games and the like, world championships and the Olympics, how the world is starting to catch up to us, like Rob talked about, the international play. And those dudes play together in all these tournaments, 3, 4, 5, you know what I'm saying, years upon years, and they're a whole team. They're a problem. And that's why they started to give the U.S. problems. They got better at basketball, but they had also played basketball so long together, they knew where they were going to be on the court. And, you know, you just throwing together all-stars from the U.S. and say, go out and win. Well, that's kind of what's happening in the NCAA tournament, right? You got these teams that have been together, the ones that make it runs, got solid juniors and seniors on their team that have been there, captains of that team. That these dudes are used to playing together. They're a more well-oiled machine versus a young team that's got a whole bunch of, you know, freshmen and maybe a few sophomores. And they've just been playing together. They got the talent, to Rob's point, but they don't have the time together. But I think for hurting the game, it hurts the broadcast and the money because you have a lot of people out there that are situational fans that know about March Madness, but, you know, they want to jump in and around the 32 or the 216 to see Duke play Kansas, right, or North Carolina play UCLA because they know those as brands. And that's what helps sell the tournament. For dudes that – you know, are in the basketball and look at prospects and want to know where they're going to go to their favorite team and where they're going to fall in the draft. They're looking at all these things. And I think we love it more from just a basketball standpoint. I love to see a team that may be a little deficient on talent but play a really good game or have a diamond in the rough like a Steph at Davidson. You know what I mean? Like, you just see them guys kind of break out early on the stage. Dwayne Wade, I don't think people really knew about him like that until he just went off in the tournament.
Marquette.
I think he beat the shit out of Cincinnati. But, you know, I think everybody else got a chance to see him, right? So I think you have those pieces that come into play. So I think it's good for the diehards. I think it's not great for the casuals. And the casuals, they'll kind of drive some of the money. They'll tune in randomly to watch two big blue boys play versus watching Florida Atlantic play San Diego State.
Yeah. The only good thing about the Florida Atlantic-San Diego State matchup is that it's in two big markets, in San Diego and the Miami area. And so that's the only good thing that could help.
That's true.
And possibly San Diego State can pull a lot out of the L.A. market, too, which is, of course, the second largest market in the country. So that's the only thing that may help the networks a little bit in this game. But, yeah, definitely a good point there, especially coming off last year when you had North Carolina and Kansas in the national championship game, two blue bloods, right?
Right.
And this year you're going to have a mid-major for sure in the national championship game. With the winner of Florida Atlantic and San Diego State. So it's going to be interesting. Yep. And so we'll see if Marshall Faulk will continue to dance on Saturday evening.
And Kawhi.
Go ahead, Nod.
Yeah, you can forget about Kawhi Leonard dancing. That ain't going to happen.
That's hilarious.
No, I mean, just to kind of piggyback on what they was just saying, like, It's basically like this. Fans and executives all say they want the Cinderella, they want the upsets. And basically they do in the early rounds. But once it starts getting grinded down to the end, they're like, nah, we want traditional power. So it's like, yeah. No, not like that. We want you here.
Yeah.
It went too far. So we're going to see what the ratings look like, see if people show up for some of these smaller schools, because, you know, like you said, we always go to brands. That's going to be interesting. The other part, the one-and-done situation, the problem is every class is not the same. Sometimes one-and-done, you get John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins. Other years, you get some guys who stuck there for 3 years because they wasn't good enough, actually, to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man.
Anthony Davis and that Kentucky team was the last great one-and-done team. That was the last great one-and-done team, that Kentucky team with Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Because it's hard to get that many good people in a class. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We expect them to be in their rank that way, but, you know, the rankings don't really bear out like that. But, man, mm-hmm. look, Florida Atlanta's going home, okay? It was nice. Beautiful thing. Clap, cheer, everything else. UConn is about to, man, look, UConn is about to smash.
UConn
everybody.
Is the only pure basketball powerhouse out of these four programs that are left, right? And even Miami, even though
yeah.
they play in the ACC, you don't consider them a basketball powerhouse. You know, their historic yeah. history has been more of a football and baseball program.
Right.
Right. The separation of talent is going to bear out. And Larrañaga, say what you want to say. Larrañaga could put his name next to a lot of greats who before the last weekend you would have never thought to put his name next to. But when you get
he's
George Mason in Miami in the Final Four, like, you're a made man. Like, he can't be stopped. And overall, I got to say this. I know I'm negative, but I got to say this. I got league pass, okay? I got NBA league pass, bro. It's like
I
Ruth Chris. And when I watch college basketball, bro, I got to be honest, dude. It's me going to Wendy's for the night. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of this is really bad basketball, and there's a lot of people. And I know these are kids, so you shouldn't criticize kids first individually or whatever. But, man, a lot of this is it's really tough to watch, bro. I change the channel and come back. Let me wait till 7 minutes left in the second half or something because it is a tough watch.
I agree with you, Naj. When you look at the level of play now, I would say back in the early 90s, I was a huge college basketball fan. But the game has definitely deteriorated quite a bit. And I would definitely agree with you from that standpoint. And from the NBA, the game is just at a faster pace than when you watch NBA versus college. College game is mostly half court. The one beautiful thing about this UConn team, they get up and down the floor. They move the ball. About passing the ball up and down the court. You know, anybody that played basketball, your coach would say, hey, the best way for you to get the ball up the court is by passing. And you know, that's the beautiful thing about UConn. You can tell they're well coached. They're utilizing their athleticism. They're moving the ball forward with the passing game. And so they're the one thing, they're the one team that's probably closest to the way they play in the NBA, right? Because they move up and down the floor. They got the athletes. They got the shooters, but yeah, the college game is definitely a more slower version. It's a half court game versus the NBA. When you go back to the early 90s, when you had UNLV, Grand Ma, Anderson Hunt, Greg Anthony, Stacey Austin,
Loyola Marymount.
Then when you had Loyola Marymount, then you had the Duke teams. Even though I hated Duke, but you had Bobby Hurley, you had Christian Laettner, you had Grant Hill. You had big Eric Montrose from Carolina and George Lynch won a national championship. Those teams were together 3 to 4 years. All of those teams, you know, the Fab Five only played together 2 years. Well, Chris Webber was with them for 2 years, but the other four was there at least three. And so you got to see those teams kind of play together for a while. And it's hard to follow today. Even a few years ago, I hate Duke, but, you know, you saw Zion Williamson only 1 year. So it's hard to follow these elite prospects for a long time. And so I definitely agree with Naj. Overall, I think the game, I'm still a fan, but the game definitely has deteriorated for sure.
And you talk about style too, right? Because back in the day, you kind of took me back, Rob, because before, and this is dating myself, you had like the 40 minutes of hell, right? You had the Arkansas teams where you had different styles to actually play, right?
Todd Day, Lee Mayberry.
Right. So you knew that it was very entertaining to watch a team like that. Let's see how they can shut them down. Or like it was entertaining to, you know, the running reps because they just had this great brand of offense. You know, like they're running down, you're like, oh, this is an exciting team. And there was an actual special about Duke. I know we've talked about how much we hate Duke. But it was about talking about Christian Laettner and kind of their style and how they built up the team. And like they knew, hey, next year, it's almost like an NBA thing. We're going to get prepared. We're going to prepare for this. You know, they just knew, like, next year we're going to work on certain things. And so, as you said, Rob, that full team is coming back minus a couple of players. But they just kind of rebuilt and reloaded. And there was some name recognition to the teams, you know. So it's a little bit different, Naj, as you, because you don't really, you know, maybe you're watching a squad for a particular player. You know, you saw the hype about Ja Morant. You saw he was going to play. Like, I want to watch this guy play in the tournament.
Same thing, like you said, Rob, about Dwayne Wade. You know, certain teams, certain, you know, you want to watch. Like, even Steph Curry, like, babyface assassin. Like, oh, this guy's killing folks. Davidson became, like, a squad you started watching, too, right? So it was interesting that you were trying to, like, latch onto a team, like, I'm going to watch this team and see how they do. You know, same thing with, I know Michigan, poor JQ has to hear us talk about the Fab Five. But that was just a situation, too, where that was another draw to college basketball, right? Just all that, that whole era was amazing, too. So it's a little
those motherfuckers, man. My dad put me in his pool, and I picked those motherfuckers to win. I picked them over Cincinnati. You know how hard that was for you to pick them over Cincinnati? And they did that shit, and they was winning. I was like, fuck it, I've been there to win if I hate them. And then this motherfucker called the timeout. I said, you know what? Never again. Never again, man. I ain't never going to forget that.
Great. You mentioned Michigan, man. You got him dropping the MFs on the show, man.
You're 12 or 13, and you're going to win your dad's office pool as his teenage son, and I was going to talk so much trash, and then I was going to say, whoop, I said, oh, no.
Well, you know, I'm a Carolina fan, so I was happy about that timeout.
Yeah.
And
like,
that Cincinnati game, dude, there's a flip side to that system.
You don't want to play North Carolina in New Orleans, man. You got Sleepy Floyd throws the ball straight to James Worthy in the 82 championship game. And then Chris Webber calls a timeout in New Orleans against Carolina. You don't want to play them against New Orleans. You don't want to play Carolina in New Orleans.
And we don't even have to mention the travel that wasn't called before the timeout. So it really should have been over already. But that Cincinnati Fab Five game, dude. You gotta, dude. We was following the Fab Five. That was our squad. I was almost in tears by halftime. Bob Huggins, Nick Van Exel, Cincinnati was blowing them out. And I get to the house, and somehow Michigan had come back, dude. I was happy. Man, we was riding for the Fab Five.
JQ still has a moment. A little PTSD over there.
That's hilarious.
That's like still to this day.
Picture that.
Still one of my favorite guards of all time, though. Nick Van Exel, a.k.a. Nick at Night, everything else, man. Love that dude.
Nick Van Exel was the dude, though. I mean, Nick the Quick, man, you just like you said, you remember, like, certain squads, certain teams, and even you had great college, like, nicknames, you know, God, Sham God. You remember all these different, like just squads, man. It was just, you know.
Remember Gary Trent? He's calling the Shaq of the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sure. Now his son is in the league, Gary Trent Jr. But Gary Trent, he's calling the Shaq of the Mac. Who was talking about
Baby
Jordan?
Stars had identities. Man. Look, the best defensive backcourt I've seen in college still to this day is when Candy played with Travieso and Padilla. That UMass backcourt, them two little dudes got after people, man. Like, they weren't great players, but defensively, man.
Hey, Davion Mitchell for Baylor a couple of years ago. He was a heck of a defensive player in college. And it translated to the NBA, too. Mm-hmm.
But I still go back. There's a lot of good backcourts. You know, obviously Miles Simons and Mike Bibby for the Arizona squad. You know, and they had Jason Terry coming out. I mean, just you remember, like, these great backcourts that literally took your squad pretty far, you know. There's some hate for Michigan, AQ, whenever the Hawks drafted Ramil Robinson. That's a whole other conversation because, you know, this certain during, you know. But, oh, man, Ramil Robinson, that dude, Khalil Mack, you remember all these great guards that, like, literally were able to take their team to the next level whenever you're watching them play. So it's just – but you, Mash, you took me back on that, Naj, because, you know, that was – man, though – and even David Sotomayor, the coach, George said.
John Calipari was the coach of UMass team.
Yeah,
Marcus
Camby. That was a start. Marcus Camby. We talked about that. Gary, anything else you want
to add?
Oh,
no, I'm having fun. Let's get on with it.
Go ahead, Naj. Finish your thought, my guy.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, and, yeah, John Calipari is a used car salesman, a con man. We all know that. But the people who say he can't coach, it's like, look, man, that dude was winning back in the bump and grind games in the high 60s, you know what I'm saying, low 50s sometimes. Mm-hmm. He won that way, and he won in Memphis with tempo and the dribble drive and spread the court stuff. So he's won multiple ways, man. So say what you want to say about him. Yes, like I said, he's a con man. But we like people got to stop saying that dude can't coach. Like Calipari can coach.
Yeah, was he part of did he do something? I'm trying to like I was literally looking this up really quickly with Lamar Odom. I know he was with – I don't know if that was something that he did with him, so I got to look that up too because I remember something that he had reached out to Lamar and just like how he's able to see talent. I know this was back in the Rhode Island days whenever Lamar Odom was coming up, but I got to look it up. But good stuff, man. This is only topics three. We're still 20-30 minutes in here, so let's kind of keep it moving here. There's been a couple of interesting hires and situations happening, not only from, you know, Texas finally hiring Ronnie Terry. There's been some, obviously, Rick Pitino, we'll talk about that. And then, you know, Caleb Love, Rob, is entering the transfer portal, man. So I know some things that talk about that because I'm sure that was an interesting surprise for you. So if you want to talk about that, we can kind of go around the horn. And we got to hear, you know, jump into the NFL about Zeke being open to return to the Cowboys or Cowboys opening to Zeke returning. So we'll talk about that too. So Rob, kind of talk about some stuff here, some news, and then we'll kind of keep it going with anything else you want to talk about as far as the parody and Caleb Love, if you will.
Yeah, Caleb Love, I mean, obviously you got to be concerned. Hubert Davis in North Carolina, they had a down year. Your preseason ranked number one in the country. They got four starters coming back from a team that went to the championship game last year and didn't even make the tournament this year. That's so you, if you're a Carolina fan, you got to be a little worried about Hubert Davis in that program right now. And Armando Bacot and R.J. Davis just announced that they're coming back for another year of college basketball. But Caleb Love, who actually was a star at our team last year that went to the championship game, had a very down year this year, didn't shoot the ball well, and now he's transferring to another program, along with quite a few other players on the team transferring. Now, they've also gained some players in the transfer portal, too. But I think overall, from a Carolina perspective, from a basketball program perspective, you got to be concerned about the direction of the program. Now, they got some top recruits coming in next year, so maybe that's why they're trying to make some room for those guys. But it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Very disappointing year for the Carolina basketball team.
Yeah, but the other way to view that is that did you find out after a little success and things that go people's way, did you find out who the dudes that really cared about the team and dudes who didn't, right? So that can go either way, right? So sometimes if you have addition by subtraction, I don't know that guy. I'm just saying that maybe, you know, Hubert Davis found out more about the character of some of the dudes on the team, and he found out that they go ahead and go. And I'll replace you because I'm North Carolina, and I still got some cachet, and I can get some recruits here. Good on Texas for hiring him. You know, he got some of the good runs. A nice run, I said shitty, sorry, a terrible way to end it by giving up a 13-point lead to Miami. But still, I never thought, I don't know if I thought Texas was going to really make that kind of a run and look that good in doing it. But they really got caught fire and was beating the brakes off of Kansas in the Big 12 championship game. So, you know, get that guy a job and see what he can do. He gave everybody else one. They sucked. So, you know, might as well find out what he can do. And, I mean, that's really where I am with that. I'll let Gary touch on, you know, Z because that's his homeboy.
Yeah, one other thing about Rodney Terry, too, I'll add, I mean, he's been the head coach before in college basketball. That team actually got better when he came in and took over as an interim coach this year, too, when Chris Byrd was suspended. So he did a phenomenal job. I mean, they beat the brakes off Kansas twice in the last week or so in the season. And so it wasn't even close. And I was really shocked that they let Miami come back and win that game. I was really rooting for him. But, you know, Texas did the right thing by him by giving him the head coach the job because they actually got better when he took over from the interim role. We saw the team continue to gain momentum. I thought I had them going to the championship game in my bracket. That's how good I thought they were playing coming into the tournament. So really disappointing. And but Texas did the right thing by him. Kudos to them.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. I mean, he got a five-year deal, over $15 million. Congratulations to him. He did coach him up. As far as the Zeke thing, you know, he had a down year, under 900 yards, 12 TDs, only 3.8 yards per carry, but still effective. Still effective in that in the short yardage stuff, goal line stuff. Still very effective. You don't score 12 TDs. If the Cowboys wanted to bring him back, I think that would be a good move for him. But I'm thinking if I were Zeke and I had some other offers, I'd be a little bitter with it. Why didn't you get this done? Why didn't he obviously wanted to work something out. Now, I'm not behind closed doors. I don't know what he wanted. I don't know what the Cowboys offered him. But I will say this, if they have an opportunity to work something out, we can get him back. I think he's still got something in his tank. I don't think he's a 1,000-yard back. I think he'll be a complimentary back. But with the fact that, Tony Pollard has not proven that he can be that every down back like Zeke was early on. He just hasn't had those carries. I'm worried about his durability. He's got a burst of speed. He's that guy, but you better bring in somebody that can take some of the load off of him. Zeke's already proven he can be that guy. So I'm hoping that they can bring him back. If not, maybe they're going to go to the draft. Maybe that's going to be one of their maybe second-round picks or something. I don't think it'll be a first-round pick, but it might be. But I think a second-round pick, because it's a deep class, so they may pick somebody up in the second round. But Zeke's already there, and he's willing to – we'll see if they can work something out. I know that the Jets were interested initially with him, and then they pulled back, and I guess they're not interested. So I don't know what his offer is, you think he's
going to
stay?
No. You forgot one team. You forgot about one team that he said he was interested in going to, and that was the Bengals. I was like, hey, listen, as long as he has a lead back,
right.
I would shoot. To be the P. Ryan back, if he lost P. Ryan to the Broncos, if you put him in that one, and if you keep mixing, I don't know about keeping mixing. You got to calm down. You got to stop shooting the kids and all that other wild shit. But if you get rid of mixing and you draft the younger running back and let him be the Bell Pound, let Zeke be the short yardage guy, for the right price, I'm in. Just as long as you aren't giving him, 200 carries a year. I think that's just the thing about it. I think that's what Dallas is kind of like, we know Paul is going to be hurt, so it's not Ronald Jones, it's not the answer. I don't even understand that as a signing. That means I know that they're going to have to give them a running back in the draft. So that's what I think the Cowboys are going to do.
Yeah, I think for the Cowboys, it's not that they didn't want to keep Zeke, they didn't want to keep Zeke at that price. And obviously they couldn't come to an agreement to reduce it and give Zeke the opportunity to see what the market has. And so I agree with both of you on your comments about Zeke. I think he definitely can still help the football teams out in that secondary back row, right? And it's just that Dallas did not want to pay him that price for what he was giving them in return any longer. So it was more of a business move, but they definitely could see that he can still help the football team out. And so they're putting it out there, hey, Zeke, you're not finding out what you want out in the market. Please still consider us. We still have a place here for you at the right price.
Yeah, come on back for the low low. But, man, I started drafting Malik Davis in best ball, so that sounds like a burnt pick because if they're drafting somebody else, then he ain't going to get a shot. I liked him last year as their young understudy, so I thought next year him and Pollard might be able to split carries and do something. But interesting thing that y'all bringing up the mixing thing with Cincinnati, because I think that's how we have to think of backfields now. Like, period, there are passing and receiving backs, and there are short yardage backs who are going to get what's blocked, and that's it, and nothing more, who will not play on third down. And the fact that we don't see Mixon play on third down at all, I don't see how they justify paying him. So, yeah, we might see Joe Mixon out of there in Cincinnati, man, because that is tough, man. You're a two-down back, and you only give me, 3.7 a carry? Like, that's sweet.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you see the devalue of the running back position in the NFL right now. Austin Eckler is getting a picture of that right now. He's one of those guys that can do it all. He can catch the ball out of the backfield.
Yeah.
He can run.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the devalue of the running back position. You have to scratch your head and think twice, think three times, really, before you draft a running back in the top five these days, right? The position is so devalued. More and more coaches want to have 2 to 3 running backs that they can rotate to keep them fresh throughout the season and things of that nature, not have that wear and tear on them. So there's definitely a devalue of the running back position. We've been seeing that here, probably taking place here in the last 5 to 10 years in the NFL.
Well, the one thing I would say, if they don't bring Zeke back, where it's going to cost him is in the passing game, because he's an excellent blocking back. And if he went to a team like Cincinnati and gave Joe Burrow that extra split second to make that decision, if I were Zeke, that's where I would go.
Yeah, good call.
We still need
– I would, too.
Look at JQ. JQ's like, anyone to help block for Joe Burrow, yes. Let's get it. That sounds great to me.
But Andre, before you move on, I just want to add one thing. Running backs have been devalued, but that also there's a flip side to that coin. It increases the value of really dynamic running backs. So meaning Bijan Robinson, as great as he is, you should draft him in the first round. And I would say the higher end of the first round. Why? Because you want to get that rookie contract out of him, and then at that point you probably won't give him a second, but you want that rookie deal out of him because that dynamic talent is what you want. And of course, you don't want to be like the Giants and then bring him back after. But we really got to think about that first 4 or first 5 years of a back, which side of that career timeline do you want? So, if somebody has Hall of Fame projections, snatch that dude up. It's worth it.
Because, like, Jahmyr Gibbs is a great example of that as well, too, man. So that's, just a great versatile back and whatnot, too. So they're talking about how he's performing in the combine. Again, a great situation. So great point, Naj. Speaking of that, and we're going to – I'll let you guys pass. I'll put that on the hold about Brock Purdy, too, because we want to talk about giving Rob a shout-out. Thank you, Rob, for putting a 7th-round mock draft. I'm talking sports with the 12th. Man, my guy, excellent. So, that's, amazing that you've taken the time to do that. So shout-out to you for that, which is on the Talking Sports page. And we can talk about that because, Rob, we're not saying you're going to get to the whole 7th-round, but if there's any highlights you want to kind of talk about. And we're going to talk about, the elephant in the room, which is Lamar Jackson, right? There's still some situations after that. That's a huge situation we can touch base on. And just situations as far as, where Stetson Bennett's going to fall too. So, Rob, we can kind of talk about the mock draft, and then we can kind of begin to dissect some situations as far as the biggest story, which is Lamar Jackson and collusion and everything we're talking about with that. So, go ahead, my guy.
All right, I'll just do the top 10 here in the first round and talk about our teams here. I still got C.J. Stroud in the number 1 spot to Carolina. I still got Bryce Young to number 2 to Houston. I still have Will Anderson number 3 to Arizona. Arizona's in a prime spot. If somebody's a big fan of Will Levis or Anthony Richardson, you're going to see a team, maybe even a coach, trade up to number 3, right, to try to pick one of those players to get either the coach, the secure guy they want, or a team to get ahead of the coach. So Arizona might be in a prime spot for a trade right there at the number 3 spot. And here's the change in my top 5 here. I got the Colts taking Will Levis at 4 instead of Anthony Richardson now. Based on what we're hearing out there now, it looks like the Colts are leaning more toward Levis over Anthony Richardson. Not necessarily saying I agree with that, but, that's just seems like the direction that they're going. And number 5, Christian Gonzalez, cornerback from Oregon, is making a lot of buzz right now. Tremendous athlete.
Wow.
Looks like he's going to be the top corner taken in the draft. And, corner is still one of the premium 4 positions in football. So there's an opportunity for him there. Looks like I got him going to Seattle at the number 5 spot. So those are where my 2 changes are in the top 5 at the 4 and 5 positions. I got Anthony Richardson going 6 to Detroit, which could be a prime spot for him, too, because he doesn't have to start in year 1, maybe not even year 2. Jared Goff gives him time to develop him with all of that physical talent that he has. Because it could be a prime. Now, if he goes to Indianapolis, he's going to be expected to start year 1, right, more than likely. He goes to Detroit, he can probably sit behind Goff a year or 2 in Detroit. So that may be a prime spot for him if he falls to number 6 to Detroit. I got Las Vegas taking Tyree Wilson, the edge rusher from Texas Tech. I got the Falcons taking Jalen Carter, defensive tackle from Georgia, at number 8. Peter Skoronski, offensive tackle from Northwestern, to the Bears, and number 10. I got the Eagles taking Paris Johnson, offensive tackle from Ohio State. The Eagles need to get some more depth on that offensive line and get younger a little bit on that offensive line here too. Stetson Bennett, I got him going in the fourth round right now to the Pittsburgh Steelers to be a backup quarterback and hold a clipboard. But right now I got him going in the fourth round to the Pittsburgh Steelers in that draft. Talk about our teams here. I'll start with the Falcons. I got him taking B.J. Ojulari, edge rusher from LSU in the second round. Maybe need to beef up a little bit because he's got tremendous speed. He'll be a guy, maybe not be a full-time starter in his first year, but he'll definitely be able to help you as a situational pass rusher and maybe a full-time starter by year two. Zach Charbonnet, running back from UCLA, in the third round. Rasheed Rice, the wide receiver from SMU, got the Falcons taking in.
I like that pick,
round.
Actually.
He 96 catches last year at SMU. Good size, 6'3", good speed. He could be a real steal in this draft, too. And then Chris Smith, the second safety from Georgia. I got him going in the fourth round to the Falcons as well. And in the fifth round, I got the Falcons taking another receiver, Trey Palmer from Nebraska, who could really help a team out in the return game as well. So he can really help you out in the special teams. I'll move on to Dallas. I got him taking Darnell Wright, offensive tackle from Tennessee in the first round. Did a phenomenal job protecting Herndon Hooker this past season. Quan Martin, safety from Illinois. I got him going in the second round of Dallas. Roshan Johnson, here's a running back that you're going to get from Texas, third round of Dallas. You know, just in case you don't get a Zeke Elliott, you still need another running back. I think we've all well pointed out that we don't think Ronald Jones is going to be the answer. That's where you get the running back. Ali Gay, defensive end from LSU, big defensive end, 6'6", 290. This is a guy that's got a ton of potential, didn't quite live up to it at LSU. This is probably right where he needs to be drafted, right? Somebody's going to take a flyer on him probably in these middle rounds to see if they can coach him up. So I got him in the fourth round going to Dallas. And I got Dallas picking Riley Moss, cornerback from Iowa in the fifth round. Sixth round, Antonio Maffey, offensive guard from UCLA. And then in the seventh round, another LSU player, linebacker from LSU, Mike Jones Jr., transfer transfer from Clemson. Cincinnati, first round, I got to take an Osiris Torrance, big offensive guard from Florida. He had a tremendous junior year at Louisiana with the Raging Cajuns, and then he moved to Florida with his head coach, and he dominated the Sun Belt in his junior year. He dominated the SEC in his senior year. So he's well in position to be a first-round pick, offensive guard from Florida. Second round, I got the Bengals taking Andre Carter, the second edge rusher from Auburn.
Yeah.
Did extremely well in the Senior Bowl as well as the Senior Bowl practices. He really stood out there. Third round, I got the Bengals drafting another Florida Gator, Gervon Dexter, big defensive end, big lengthy defensive tackle, was about 6'5", 310 pounds. He's got long arms at the defensive tackle position. So the Bengals rack up on some depth on the defensive line there. Fourth round, Parker Washington, who can help you in a return game as well as in the slot. If you're the Bengals, you want to keep those three receivers, but just in case you don't, and even if you do keep all three, Parker Washington can still help you in the slot and in the return game there in the fourth round. To get some depth at running back in the fifth round, Chase Brown from Illinois. And in the sixth round, you're going to need some depth in the safety position. Marte Mapu, safety from Sacramento State, really shined in the smaller level college football. You hope sometimes you can find a steal from those schools. You draft him in the sixth round. And then Cam Jones, linebacker from Indiana, in the seventh round. My beloved Saints, I got to take Cam Smith, a cornerback from South Carolina in the first round. Another corner with long arms, tremendous athlete there. Got the Saints taking DeJuan Jones, offensive tackle from Ohio State. You know they got to draft an Ohio State player, right? So got them going in the second round for depth on the offensive line for the Saints. Then in the third round, Derek Hall, edge rusher from Auburn. I think he's more of a situational pass rusher in the pro game. which you need those guys, right, in the NFL. You need those guys that can come in and help you in the pass rush game. The Saints going to need some depth at the running back position. The Alvin Kamara situation is still up in the air. I got to take Zach Evans, running back from Ole Miss. He's a small running back, but he's got a lot of explosion. And so running back from Ole Miss in the fourth round. In the fifth round, the Saints got two fifth-round picks. Got to take an Amari Burner, linebacker from Florida, a really good coverage linebacker, right? So he's really good backer to have in the game on cover on passing downs. And Nick Scaldiveri, offensive guard from Old Dominion. And then in the seventh round, the Saints got two picks there. Josh Van, wide receiver from South Carolina. And Jaleel Billingsley, tight end from Texas. He's 6'4 in the 220s. He's more of a tweener. They're going to have to bulk him up a little bit more for the pro game for the tight end position. And that's why you see him going late in the draft in the seventh round there.
I tell you what, it might be a full-blown ride in Cincinnati if they don't come out of this draft with a damn tight end. They got one now if they sign Irv Smith. They got one. Everybody else is – they got something they can re-sign, don't get me wrong. But they got one.
They signed Irv Smith?
Like, yeah, well, they said – sources said that he would sign the one-year deal to go to Cincinnati, which I think if he actually does, that's a great pickup for Cincinnati to get Irv Smith to pairing with those three
wide receivers.
But, yeah, they got – yeah, you already know how they're going to do. The way y'all got Buckeyes, where we gonna have Tigers or somebody from Louisiana on the team? Yeah, that's the only thing about it. It's like, I would love to have the depth at on the defensive line. I think that's important in the offensive line. I don't know if they'll sacrifice one of those picks to get a tight end just because they have lost a couple here in free agency.
And it's the right move, man. You can't pay Hayden Hurst that kind of money. Let Carolina
Shit, no.
yeah. do that. Like, you just can't.
Yeah.
I like Hayden Hurst, but I was like, bro, if you try to make that kind of coin, you got to go.
Get some players, though. Thielen, Hurst, you're like, what you doing over there? They surprisingly
–
Alexander Martin, we're like, what y'all doing over there? And they get their quarterback. It's going to be interesting. Rob, thank you for that. Gary, you got any thoughts on the mock draft? Gary?
No, I think he puts a lot into him. You know what? One thing I was going to say, you know, Rob's got this job where he needs 26 hours a day to really do his job. And for him to do this for us is really appreciated.
Yeah, appreciate you, Rob.
It's a beautiful thing. And matter of fact,
oh, man,
it helped me out. I've been trying
sometimes
to.
Sometimes you
got to
have hobbies to stay sane, and this is one of my hobbies.
Yeah.
Keep
that's
you out,
right.
Hey, that keep you out the strip club and out of trouble. But
there you go.
I picked up a couple of players in the best ball drafts based on listening to some of the stuff Rob has said. So Rasheed Rice and some of those other guys, I've been scooping them up easy because other people didn't know about them. So I've been and y'all need to get on Underdog, man. Get on Underdog, get in this best ball. You need to do one for the show, and have all of us get in there. And throw our picks out there and see what happens for the year, man. Best ball, you just draft it and forget about it. And no setting lineups, none of that. But, yeah.
Well, I do have an announcement for you. I do have an announcement for you guys.
Uh-oh.
I am traveling down to Arizona for my second tournament, pickleball tournament.
Oh, my God.
Let's see how I do. Got an email. I'm heading down Friday or Saturday.
You wow.
Nice.
I mean, you can find some shit in Portland to do. I'm just going to put that out there.
What's that?
You can find some pickleball in Portland to do, bro. That's a long-ass drive for a pickleball tournament. Like, they got to have one in Spokane or Seattle or some shit. Damn.
Hey, that's where the best are, though. They really are. They're phenomenal down there. Way out of my league, but we'll see. Give it another try.
I mean, hell yeah, let's get the RV together. Let's ride. God,
everywhere.
Damn, that's a long ass ride.
Especially the way I go.
That's the end of our live portion of the show on tonight. We're going to be back at you, I believe, on next Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern. 11 p.m. Eastern. So for those of you all in Hartford, Connecticut, in Miami, West Palm Beach, Fort Lauderdale area, the Final Four this week. going to be 11 p.m. on Tuesday night. We want to hear from y'all to recap the Final Four. The Central Time Zone, Milwaukee. Come on, tune in. Number one seed in the Eastern Conference right now. It's going to be 10 o'clock Central for you all. Denver, number one out west right now. We want to hear from you all. That's going to be 9 p.m. Mountain Time. In California, that's going to be 8 p.m. Pacific for those of you in San Diego and Los Angeles and JT's favorite city, Fresno. Jackson, Mississippi, West Coast. Good night, people.
I can't stand you, man. You're so stupid. Good night, people. We'll talk to y'all later.
I love it. Good stuff. Obviously, baseball season is literally right around the corner. We didn't get a chance to talk about that, but some really quick predictions. You know, is Ohtani going to be the next, obviously, MVP? Juan Soto is what they're kind of doing, early predictions. You know, Aaron Judge, Mike Trout. Julio Rodriguez, you know, Shane Bieber, all these different guys for Cy Young. So, again, baseball season is right around the corner, gentlemen. So, again, also excited about that. Just really quick, I want to talk about the Colts making a run at Lamar Jackson. I think it's interesting because, what is it, Shane, who's the coach, Scott Skene, whatever his name, from the Eagles. He came from seeing a quarterback like, you know, Jalen Hurts. So we'll see if that's actually somewhat, but, you know, like I said, you know, no, I know you're shaking your head too, you know, JQ, because it's like, yeah, you know, right now, all that stuff with Lamar Jackson, it's just terrible how this is going down, man, you know, so, but it's just.
No, that's not one of the situations. The only reason why I say that is because Indianapolis is in the AFC. If I'm Baltimore and I can't keep Lamar Jackson, I am not going to give him to another team that can mess with me for the next decade. Like, if we got to see you once every 4 years when the schedule rotates, and if we make it to the Super Bowl and y'all make it to the Super Bowl, we'll deal with that shit then. But what I'm not going to do is have you be in the AFC and then we get better. And we make the playoffs. And I got to see your ass every time we go to the playoffs. And now you got an axe to grind every chance you get to see me in that decade. Listen, unless they just give them an offer they can't refuse. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's got to be crazy good. The same way I felt about the Jets. If I'm Baltimore, I already got to deal with Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Herbert, Lawrence. I mean, it's only seven damn playoff teams. That's five quarterbacks we all think are really either are there or are going to be there. I've got one in Lamar if I feel like I'm Baltimore. If I can't keep him, I'm not giving him to another AFC team so I can make that six damn good quarterbacks I got to go through to get to the Super Bowl. Like, I think Ozzie Newsome and them guys and the Costa are smarter than that. Unless Indianapolis just gives them their whole draft in the next couple of years, there's no way I trade him within the AFC to the Jets, to the Colts, nobody. Titans, neither one of them. The Patriots, none of them.
You can't be analytical when you want to and then be emotional. So it's like, if you're not going to give them the money, like, I mean, you just got to let the chips fall where they may. If somebody comes in with a poison pill offer, and sadly, we don't have an Al Davis in the NFL anymore. So I'm not too worried about it because I think most of these owners are going to stay in lockstep. I don't think anybody's going to break ranks and do the deal that we all know should be done. 26-year-old franchise quarterback, you throw those picks out there and you give them the guaranteed money and you roll and rack up money, wins, and everything else. But these guys, they seem like they're all like this is solidarity forever. This is like a union. The NFL owners, man, these boys standing strong.
Unfortunately, that's what the Ravens said. The Ravens, I read several articles today, and they're, he's going nowhere, you know. We've got him, you know.
Yeah.
They're very confident in it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, you're the coach.
Good, Roger. Real quick.
Yeah, if you're the coach, I think you kick it around and see if there's anything there, but I agree totally with JQ said. If you're the Ravens, you absolutely do not. I mean, the Packers made that very clear about Aaron Rodgers. Say, hey, we are not trading him to a team in the NFC. I mean, they made that clear from the very beginning, you know, when this all was coming out. We're not trading him to any team in the NFC, so don't even bother calling. I think ultimately the Ravens feel like he's going to stay, and that's where I believe he's going to wind up being. I think he's going to wind up still being with the Ravens. I think if you're the coach, you got to at least kick the tires and see if there's anything there, possibly. But just like with the 49ers last year with their wide receiver, Deebo Samuel.
Deebo.
He asked for a trade last offseason. the 49ers made it work and say, hey, you know, we're not trading you, and I think this is going to be the same situation with the Ravens. Lamar Jackson, number one, needs to get an agent. You know, he can't handle this on his own. I think one of you all sent that. The difference
that was
play between he and Josh Allen is made.
He
needs to get an agent. He cannot think that he can do this on his own. He cannot.
It's above his pay grade.
He needs to get smart and get with an agent here. Somebody needs to be giving him that advice. He needs to make sure he's getting professional help to really get the real value of what he should be getting right now, right? So he needs to, and not only an agent is going to not only help you get a good contract with your own team, but an agent is going to also help you get with the right people for getting endorsements and things of that nature, right? So I think there's a lot of revenue out there that he's probably missing out on because he's not getting the right guidance. And, you know, I really hope that he does get it because, like I said, there's a lot of money that he's leaving out on the table right now.
I hope he don't get it.
The discrepancy between him and Allen is about slotting, though. He was drafted at the end of the first round, so they got that fifth year, but they also paid him at a lower slot. Josh got re-upped earlier, and he got less money than some of the other guys, but he got a lot of money. So, like, I agree he should get an agent. The agent is going to make things better. It makes the negotiation less stressful because, you know, in negotiation, you're going to say stuff to people that they're not going to want to hear during negotiation, and they'd rather be your agent than you having to argue with you for your money. But overall, though, he's actually in the right. Like, he should be paid more than Deshaun Watson, and I can understand his position on it, where it's like it's either this or nothing. Now, the question comes up, though. We're in unprecedented territory here. He has the power of almost an NBA player because of the position at quarterback. If he just decides, I'm not going to show up, the Ravens are in trouble. So, I understand the hard line stance, but if that guy doesn't show up during training camp, this going to be like the 90s when dudes didn't show up. Like, we have to do training camp watch for Emmitt. You know what I mean? Like,
that's funny.
Remember that.
We all remember that.
Two games? They've been 0-2 when he signed him after that second loss?
They're like, okay.
They've been 0-2, they signed him, and then went on 1-2 ball.
Man, he started to play hardball. Man, that was classic. Every day, like, where's Emmitt Smith? We can do without Emmitt Smith. Two games. Shit. Hey, here we go, Emmitt.
Unfortunately, that analogy is really good, Maj. I hope he does get an agent, and I hope he gets what he wants wherever that is. He deserves it. He's a good player, MVP, so he should get paid, and he should be paid more than a whole hell of a lot of quarterbacks, including the one we have in Dallas.
And that's the crazy thing, too. Everyone talked about Lamar.
We'll trade for him.
He bet on himself, right? And that's the crazy thing. He didn't really do his contract, and then he ended up getting hurt. And then it's like now he's like trying to play hardball. Now he's like, yeah, I'm not signing this deal without, you know, getting my guaranteed money. And you know, he's in the right, and it just happened to follow everything that's happening with Deshaun Watson. And it's just like you said, everyone's like, nah, we ain't paying you this. But it's crazy because he actually should be getting – he's an MVP. He's got led the league in touchdowns. I mean, it's just crazy how this guy should be getting paid. And like you said, Rod, he has to get an agent just to make sure that everyone's taking care of him. I mean, it's just – this is the ultimate, like, what not to do. But then you're looking at – go ahead, check you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you led me until you made me think about this. If he was smart, if it didn't happen, I might sign that 9-10-1 and not play whenever I felt a change. But what I would do is watch real, real close what happens with Justin Herbert, who just started his negotiations with the Chargers, with Burrow, who's his negotiations with the Bengals, and see what they get. Because then this whole notion, you could make the owners put it to the test if he allows himself to maybe wait a year. Because if they then go and give those dudes these contracts, they say they're not going to give Lamar, and neither one of them have won an MVP. Now he's sitting back like, oh, yeah, for real? And I think the conversation kind of changes. So to Nigel's point, that whole solidarity and numbers thing, you put that to the test if you're Lamar, if you let them get their deals done and see what they get in the marketplace and then try to compare yours to where everybody loves Herbert and Burrow, but they also know that Deshaun got overpaid. Where does that number fall, and could he get in between it? So that's going to be real interesting. Like, but, again, an agent were probably telling that, like, okay, this is what they're doing. This is what we do. Let's sign up for this. This guaranteed money for 1 or 2 years. Let's see what these other dudes get and see how they, and then we can get back into the market. Like, yeah, now you have no leg to stand on. I'm not giving me all this money because you just gave it to these two.
Right. And Amazon just entered the marketplace, so there's more money on the table. Like, the NFL owners at a certain point, we just got to admit that not only are they greedy, as we see now teams are going to play two Thursday night games, it's just getting to the point where it's like, look, man, y'all beat them at the negotiating table every time. You don't have to set them every time when you sit down to play spades. Sometimes you can beat and then everybody's amicable. They want to run a Boston every time they sit down at the table. And it's like, you have to give up a little bit. You're getting this new revenue coming in from Amazon and Disney and everybody else who wants the NFL, YouTube. You got that new deal. Money is coming in hand over fist, and the quarterbacks are going to take the lion's share of the labor part. And you just have to accept that as an expense of doing business. You cannot not pay Herbert. You cannot not pay all of these guys, man. Joe Burrow, like, you're going to have to pay. I understand they're scared of guaranteed money. But these people are going to be icons of the city. They're going to drive the conversation and all of the merchandise and everything else. Like, these guys are stars beyond stars. Because let's talk about it. The NCAA and the and the NBA Finals could be going on, and we put a preseason game on. Guess what? That preseason game would be neck and neck with both of those other sports, premier events. So, and I understand Bashotti, he's gun shy because of the Joe Flacco thing. I understand that's hard to get over. He promised that dude he'd pay him if he won a chip. They won a chip, he paid him, and he regrets it, and he ain't never letting that go. But, dude, you got to pay Lamar. Stop playing.
Yeah. That man said they try to sell him and run a Boston. I am done after that. Nas, you are a fool. Oh, my goodness. Wow. Only you could bring space into this.
I ain't lying. The owners don't want to win, just win. They want to beat the hell out them boys at the table.
You said he's trying to sell them. I'm good. Y'all go ahead. I'm good. Just wait.
All right, gentlemen. I just want to get those last things in, and we will continue for next week. Thank you so much for patience, gentlemen. It's been a good day. Naj, appreciate you jumping on. I didn't get a chance to text you. You already knew that we were on, so we're on next Tuesday. Rob, appreciate all your work. We'll keep it going. Thanks, Gary, for jumping on in the West Coast. And
before we get off, one more thing. Andre, you have just a verbal warning with your tardy tonight.
Uh-huh.
And hopefully we can just leave it at that, and we won't need any other actions. So be on time next Tuesday.
Well, sound like somebody gave you that conversation at Delta, Gary.
Not me.
That damn Ace of Spades ain't welcome. Put this to a diamond up your butt. Bang, man. I'm sorry, Nas. This is your fault. All right, I'm getting off of here.
Nah, it's all good. Man, I don't feel appreciated sometimes. It's all good, man. So, I had a rough week, man. But it's all good, man. I was busy. So I apologize.
Shout out to Andre, who is not signing the write-up. He said, wait a minute. I do way too much work around here. If y'all be trying to write me, I'm not signing.
Hey, whoa, wait a minute.
I ain't signing nothing, man. It's all good. Go ahead. It's all good. Appreciate you guys. I had a good little streak. I tried to get on early. I tried to show some love, it's all good. But,
at least we can't do it for love.
We
got video evidence of that happening.
Yeah, we've all had some moments. It's on me, but it's all good. We'll see you guys next week. Same time, same channel. Please be safe in the week, and we'll go from there for sure. So, all right.
Peace.
All right, y'all. I'll see you later.
Peace, y'all.
Later, y'all.